Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and I am joined today by a guest that I'm very interested and excited to talk to, and I think you guys will be as well. We've been talking a lot about breeders here on the program, so we thought we'd bring you the breeders of some of our top dogs right now, so that you can hear from their words and their stories how they got where they are today. So we are speaking with Lori Carlton. She is the breeder of the Bichon Frise, call name Flynn, and I'm sure Lori will tell us this registered name because it's gone from my mind. So Lori, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I'm very pleased that I can help do this podcast.
So give us a little bit of background. What brought you to purebred dogs and specifically to Bichons?
Well, it's an interesting story because my parents raised dogs. My father was a pharmacist, came out of the army and decided he wanted to go with hunting dogs and decided on the Weimaraner. So he and my mother raised Weimaraners. They started an all-breed kennel, and I grew up with them. And my dad branched out to other breeds. We had German Wirehair, German Shorthair. We had a few other with Springer. But primarily we had the Weimaraners, and I learned to hunt, and I love to watch dogs that work and do what the breed tells them to do. But then we got into Old English Sheepdogs in 1965. And when I was 11, I showed my very first dog for somebody else, and the rest is kind of history. I won Best of Opposite Sex to a huge entry at Westminster in 1971, and my dad won the breed there with the Old English Sheepdogs. And it was quite an exciting time, and that's how I started with all this. I was actually a licensed professional handler. I was also a licensed assistant handler. And, of course, this was before they decided that they weren't going to license us anymore.
I was going to say, that dates you right there.
Yes, it does. And I got interested in the Bichons. My father went to buy me one, and I said no, because I had started grooming when I was 14. And, you know, I'd get out of school, and I'd come home, and I'd groom two dogs for clients, and off we'd go. I learned as I went, basically. I didn't have anybody teach me because I used to sit and watch our groomer all the time, and her and I would just talk because my job was afternoon chores at our kennel. So as we went along, the kennel part was like, this is good, but this isn't quite what I want to do. So my dad went to Europe. He says, I'm going to get you a Bichon. And I said, no, I don't want that extra work. And I didn't really want to learn about them. I just, for some reason, I was stuck, and I just didn't want to do it. My love was Bouviers. And kind of accidentally, the following year, we had a client come to us to show a Bichon. And this Bichon happened to be a really, really nice dog. His name was Sam. And Sam was owned by a nice little older lady, and she wanted my dad to show the dog. And my dad got hurt really bad after the dog was already finished as a champion, and he couldn't show the dog for 3 months. He'd gotten torn up by an Irish setter, his hand pretty bad. So I showed the dog, got my first best in show, got my first four groups with this dog, and at that particular point, in between there, the groomer that was working with the owner and her had some sort of a difficult situation. I don't know what it was. And I got to groom the dog. So here I was grooming this dog, not quite knowing exactly what they wanted.
Tell me a time frame, because Bichons are comparatively new. So are we talking right about the time?
1973, they were recognized. My dad went to Europe in 1972. And early part of 1974 is when Naomi brought over Sam for my dad, and in 1976, in January, is when I won my first group, and I beat the top skipper key, and I won my first four groups that month, and I went best in show the last day under Erica Hutchins, and that was how I started in the Bichon. But in the meantime, though, grooming Sam made me love the breed. They were just such characters, and I had some Bouviers. The late 70s were a very difficult time for me. I was transitioning into buying the kennel. My parents were retiring. I was married, and it wasn't a good marriage. And so when I bought my first Bichon from another person, his name was Andy, Ranks Raggedy Andy. We won the National in 81 with him. I went through a divorce, and he was the best dog, and he lived to 18 and a half years old. What a cool dog. Sam also lived 18 plus. And both of them were very healthy. But that's how I got involved with Bichons, but I still had Bouviers. And I'm now out of Bouviers. I'm tired of the grooming of the big, big breeds, although I still love them. And I'm a glutton for punishment because we have a Afghan hound who's finished and is a pet, too. So I like grooming. What can I say?
I was going to say, you like hair more than a lot of us.
Oh, maybe. Yes. But I do have a whippet.
Okay, yeah, that, as long as you got a whippet. Everybody's got a whippet. I got a whippet. Everybody's got a whippet.
You bet. But that's how I got involved.
And that's awesome. So you also handled professionally for a number of years in addition to just the Bichons, right?
Yes, I became a professional handler, and I retired in 1994. I had gone through two bad marriages and met my husband, who was a veterinarian, in 1986. We got married in 1989, and when we started our own practice in 92, handwriting was on the wall that I was going to end up having to choose one or the other, and I chose the main frame of staying home and helping my husband with the new business, and I wanted to retire, and it just so happened, my dad died in 91, but he got to see me win the breed at the garden with the Borzoi I was showing, Fox Runs Ivy Rose. And the following year, I didn't show at the garden, and then the next year in 93, I showed, and I won the group under Bob Forsyth.
Oh, my goodness. Now, that's winning the group under Bob Forsyth at the garden. That seems like that's pretty much up on the wall for me.
Oh, heavens, yes. And it stays in my front office all the time. I look at it every day. I love that. But that was an absolute wonderful thing. I went on that particular bitch. We put 7 specialty wins on her, including the national. And I did that under Ann Clark. Then the following year in March, I showed at the Detroit show. Now, this was when Borzoi entries were 200 and 300 at specialty, not like today. And we won the group over the Elkhound that Pat Trotter had. She came in. And she had won the group at the garden that year in 94, and I beat her. And under Ms. McDonald. And she'd never had the dog before, so I had some wonderful, wonderful judges. And this particular bitch, she was not only a beautiful representative of the Borzoi, but she had the greatest personality. And she just was a pleasure to live with. So I hung up my shingle.
I think a lot of people miss out on the fact that that's a huge piece of it for us.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
These dogs do have personalities and are our companions and friends.
Well, and she was so great. I mean, she'd see her owner at a show. And she's like, oh, hi, how are you? I'm with Lori. And when she'd come to the house to pick her up, she was like, okay, bye, Lori. See you later. I'm going home. And it was always so cute. I mean, she just, I could let her go off anywhere I wanted to, anywhere. And I could pick her off lead, and she never ran away. I trained her to come and trained her not to chase cats and the whole 9 yards.
Yeah, that's a plus.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You fall in love with these dogs, and then they become part of your life.
Absolutely. So talk to us a little bit, Lori, about specifically the Bichon breeding program that brought us Flynn.
Well, I grew up with working dogs and herding dogs and sporting dogs. So I got an opportunity to watch dogs, and I have always been a person that says you've got to have the structure. You can fine-tune the little things, but you can't fine-tune the whole dog. Especially the front quarter. So as I was started with Bichons, I was a mentor for the first couple of years, even though Naomi gave me several of her own dogs, and they belonged to me, and I finished their championships, and I worked for Gene Rank and a couple other people in our breed. But it was always important to me, and I was very maligned in the beginning by a few people because of the fact that I had these sound, solid dogs. They were winning, finishing their championships, but they didn't have the classical pretty head. And I said, well, I'll breed to that head at some point in time, but they've got to have the structure first. So going through the years, that has been the primary reason when I breed. Several years ago, I bred to a dog that, unbeknownst to me, this is another issue about breeding dogs. That's a very difficult one. It's when the breeders are not honest with other breeders. Anyway, this dog happened to be a carrier of juvenile cataracts, and I did not know that. So when the two dogs that I kept out of the litter both developed juvenile cataracts at the age of 6 and a half. It was a devastating situation, both emotionally and financially. I had to make big decisions there. So both the boys were neutered. I took all of the puppies and dogs that were in my breeding program that were related, and I spayed and I neutered, and I found wonderful homes for everybody. And I basically started over again. And I've been extremely careful ever since then. But I breed my dogs for myself. I don't breed them for other people. I breed them for myself. If I don't sell them, oh well. I want a dog that is sound, that can come, that can go. Yeah, I want a pretty face, just like everybody else does, but I want the proper coat, and I want the proper attitude, and I want the health. I don't want health issues. Now, I can't say that I haven't had some, but I don't know any breeder who's been breeding dogs for any length of time that hasn't had an issue at some point in time or another. So that becomes a big thing, too. But what got me to Flynn was a dog I kept years ago. She gave me 12 champions. Structurally sound, beautiful bitch, ugly head. That's, you know, the whole honest to God's truth. But I bred her down, and I bred her to a dog that had a beautiful head, had some leg on him. She didn't have enough legs for me. And that's what started this coming down to where Flynn is today. And I took some of that progeny, and I bred it into my line. Years ago, I bred to the JR dog, and I got some nice dogs. I would have liked a little more leg on him, but you know what? There's no perfect dog out there, so let's take that aside and try to breed for the dogs that we want. So I have down from Hildy and then down to my dog by the name of Rudy. Rudy is a dog. He goes back to both JR and to Rumor, but he's a grandson of the dogs that Mimi Winkler breeds, and that's Reno. So anyway, I have Rudy. He's a nice dog, not a great dog. He's got lots of things that I like about him. He's got a beautiful face, and I bred him to several bitches, and I got the things I wanted. I wanted the pretty face. I kept my front. I kept my rears that I wanted to, and I kept the consistency, and that's what I wanted to do.
So you were able to find a sire who was able to produce those qualities you were looking for across lines? Was he able to hold up with different types of bitches? Is that what you found with him?
Yes, and I also found that if I went out and went to a stud dog and came back into my line, I can't tell you how many people told me not to do what I did as far as breeding to certain dogs, JR being one of them, because they got, in their opinion, garbage. But I said, well, I'm going to go with the bitch that I think that he can help the most. I didn't breed every bitch to him. I bred one, and I got wonderful dogs out of him. Wonderful. I was very pleased. And I found that a lot of the dogs that I have bred to that mesh with my line, and I think it's because I go in with bitch that I feel that that dog can help, not because he's a top winner, and I very rarely ever breed to the top winning dogs. I want the dog that is sound, solid, and that I think can help what my bitch. So that's how I get down to where we are with Flynn.
Right. I think what you're talking about is something that I hear consistently from my mentors, from, you know, the breeders that I've talked to and we hear here on the show, that whoever's winning the most isn't necessarily the dog your particular bitch needs.
Right.
And knowing the qualities of your particular female that are good and bad are part of the decision-making process. But one of the things you just mentioned is something that I have found personally, and I'd like to go into that a little bit more. You talk about what's meshed well. So we talk about a line that nicks with yours and one that doesn't, right?
Yes.
So can we talk a little bit more about that and how you sort of came across that? So what are we looking for? Do you look at the pedigrees to find what's going to nick right?
No, I do look at the pedigrees, but that's not the first thing I look at. I just recently considered a dog, but in doing the consideration, because I had seen the dog, I'd had my hands on the dog, and I really liked him. I thought, wow, this is a nice dog. I went and I kind of looked and I said, okay, he's got all of his health clearances. But I looked at all the bitches that he'd been bred to, and there wasn't anything that stood out and said, wow, I want to breed to this dog to get that. There was nothing there that was producing anything like what he was. And then I went to where he came from, and I actually talked to one of the breeders who's behind him, and there wasn't really anything. So I'm beginning to think that this particular dog was a fluke, not the kind of dog that I want to breed into. So when I see a dog, I ask to go over that dog. And then I pursue, who's it out of? Where did it come from? I want to see the parents if I can. And I don't necessarily have to have my hands on the dog. There's several people that I know that I can trust their decisions. One of them, which is Bill, I can say, Bill, would you go over this dog for me and tell me what you think? And he has. So that's how I go about looking at the dog. I will look at pedigrees in the meantime, but that's not my first priority when I'm looking for a stud dog or looking to buy a dog or buy a bitch. I think this is another thing that successful breeders have done throughout the years is they're honest with themselves. They're honest with what they have. They're not willing to compromise when they have a certain standard in which they have set for themselves. They're not willing to do that. I'm not willing to do that. And there's certain things in our breed that I refuse to keep, to show, to breed. There's no point. I just don't want it. And you know what? Yeah, it can finish out there. Okay, so what? That's not my point. So I'm going to find a most wonderful home for it. I'm going to interview the people, make sure that it's the right dog for the right home, and then we go from there.
Right. So the need to have 20 million every single puppy finished from the litter is not necessarily your driving force.
No. Although I have finished litters. I finished a whole litter that was actually Rascal. Flynn is very tightly line-bred, and Rascal is his grandfather on both sides. And his whole litter finished within a few months of each other, and it's so tight that, well, actually, Rascal's not his grandfather on both sides. I take that back. His mother is Rascal's sister and Rascal's grandpa on dad's side. So it's tight in that respect. But yes, it's very important.
That uncle-niece, I love that uncle-niece. That particular type of pedigree combination is one of my personal favorites. So,
well, Flynn's daddy, I had the opportunity of finishing his mother. And although she was a nice bitch, she wasn't anything great. We bred her to Rascal. So it was a singleton puppy. And that singleton puppy was Governor. And I was fortunate enough that Karen Torme allowed me to take him and show him. And he was the multi-best in show dog, and he was a very beautiful dog. I really enjoyed him. He had a great drive, great attitude, a little bit of a hard keeper, but for the most part, he was just a cool dog. And he was a solid dog, and he had all the things I wanted. Yes, he could have been maybe a little shorter in body or maybe a little taller in leg. But then that's where it comes in that I bred him to Roxy, who is Flynn's mom, and we got the qualities in the one dog.
Well, and I think two things. One of the things, we talked about the Nick, and then you mentioned the one, the Fluke. And I think that's super important for people to hear, the idea that just because this one dog is great, if everything around it is not great, it is not liable to produce great.
Right. Well, and I'm from old school breeding, too. I don't necessarily breed to the dog that is the dog that I'm seeing. I'll breed to its dad. And I also am not one to, you know, just go breed dogs to the top dog. There's no way. I want consistency, and I don't want to breed my best to my best. That's a recipe for disaster I have found. You take a great bitch, you breed it to a great dog, and how many times have we seen in so many breeds and pedigrees where you go, oh, really? It's like, no, I want a nice sound. I don't want any major faults, and I'll breed it to a better dog, or I'll take a good bitch and I'll breed it to a nice dog, but I don't do the great to the great anymore.
Interesting. That's a great, great tip. So then I think one final piece of this too, that is maybe even the toughest piece of it, is selecting and raising puppies. So you've, right? So you've done this breeding, and you've done this breeding. Okay, so the example you were giving, you had these beautiful fronts, you had these nice bodies, and you had these ugly heads, and you do the breeding to get a better head, and you don't pick the one with the good head, right? I watch people do it all the time. It makes my head spin off. So talk to me a little bit about that.
I actually have a litter I'm looking at right now as I'm sitting here talking to you at my dinner room table. Yep. So they're born here in my kitchen living room. They're raised here. They're under our thumb the whole time. They go back and forth to work with us every day when we want to. When they're baby puppies, they go every day. As I'm weaning them, which I'm doing now, I'll leave them for a little longer period and come home at lunch and stuff and take care of them. But it's evident at birth sometimes that you have a really nice head. I'm not one to say this is a great puppy after it's born. I don't know. There are people that can do that, but I'm not one of them. I watch them grow, and I don't pick my puppies until they're closer to 10 weeks, and then I actually don't even, quote, pick them. I let them grow up. But what makes a great puppy in the beginning is, first of all, the attitude. What do they look like? Do they have that pretty face? Do they have that pretty body? Let's take them and put them on the ground, and let's see them walk individually, and then let's hang on to it. Okay, we're going to raise this dog. It's going to get exposed to people. It's going to get exposed to the lead. First of all, I separate all my puppies at 7 to 8 weeks so that when they do go to their new homes, they are sleeping the night through so people don't have crazy puppies. And I hate separation anxiety, so I try to help alleviate some of that by doing some of the prep work. So I've started all of this kind of stuff to every puppy. I take them to the clinic with me. They're groomed. They spend some time in their crate alone. Teach them yes. I teach them no. Good puppy, bad puppy. And I do very little classes. I do most of my teaching. First of all, I'm so busy sometimes. We do most. I don't do it all. My husband helps me a lot. But we start taking these puppies and teaching them, and I take over big time on dogs that I feel have great potential, which Flynn does and did. He showed it. It was evident. Everybody who ever saw him said, oh, my God, what a beautiful puppy. He was the only boy in the litter. But my husband's favorite in that litter was not only, I mean, Flynn was obviously both of our favorites, but his sister, who he actually, Larry, went reserve winner's bitch at our national with her when she was just a little bit over a year. But in training them, we watch how they react, how they start to grow. I know when a Bichon's teeth are coming in. I know when they're going to lose them. I know when they're going to go through the uglies, and I want them to go through the uglies. I don't want a puppy to stay beautiful from day one all the way through. Most dogs will go through maybe not a total ugly, and I have to say Flynn didn't go through a total ugly, but he did go through a pretty gangly area, and his little legs went different places, and his little mind went different places, and, you know, so you just have to get the focus back. And I show him, and Larry usually starts him out on the lead, and he usually starts him in the puppy classes, and then I usually take over. Well, that's how we have always worked it, and it's worked out wonderful. And then when it comes to specialing, other than the most recent dog we have, I've done all the specialing. And Flynn was obviously a winner from the beginning, and I had lots of compliments on judges who, I mean, Kiki loved him. She saw him at a show, and I was a little surprised that a couple judges didn't particularly like him in the beginning, because I don't know if they didn't see the potential, or obviously they judge on the day, but he was there. I mean, but he did come into himself a little over a year old, and then about, well, I guess he was a year and a half old is when I turned him over to our first handler, and our other owner didn't see eye to eye on things sometimes, and that was what led me to getting Flynn to Bill. But she did a beautiful job with him. I don't want to malign her or complain at all. You know, she did a good job, but it became a personality issue.
Well, and that happens.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's one of the things we could have an entire podcast on, building good handler-client relationships.
Exactly.
and how we do that. And sometimes we can't do that. And we actually did. Dinah Bagenstos, who's president of the PHA, she and I sat and had a podcast basically on that very topic, on this is how to make things work well and how to start a good relationship and build a good relationship. And it's not always easy.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. But, you know, Flynn got the show. I mean, we didn't show him repetitively, and I didn't special him hard when he was a youngster. And he had to learn. I taught him to lay on the table. He had to be a nice dog. He had to learn the rules. And I think that's what has made him, I mean, Bill tells me what a great dog he is, and that he's just so easy to live with. And I'm like, well, I started doing that when he was a baby. And I do that with all of them. He's not just the only dog that I do that with. But I put a little extra into the dogs that I think have the beautiful potential. And it so happens that his other owner and I met before Governor was being shown. And we hit it off. They're just wonderful. They are the best. And you couldn't ask for better owners. And we totally enjoy the relationship we've had. And Flynn has done so well. And it's just kind of nice to be able to see your own dog out there and going, wow, this is what 40 years of breeding has gotten me.
Right. Right there, you're living the dream. So I'm very hopeful that some of your suggestions and thoughts and ideas will be helpful to other people that are listening here today. And 40 years from now, they'll have their own dogs to do the same with.
I hope so. And the other thing that was not mentioned in our conversation that is so very important is I welcome newcomers. I welcome the people that need to come, that want to learn not only about my breed, but whatever I can help them with. The structure. I was speaking with a fellow club member the other day, and we're going to do a breeders forum at our national coming up, and it's going to be an informal thing. And I'm looking forward to it because we need new people in our breed, and especially our coated breeds, our breeds that need mentoring in. And I love to mentor to try to help. And I work with a couple of juniors. And I mean, to me, that's very rewarding. And I welcome people who ask questions about my breeding program. A no-brainer for me because we've got to help them.
Absolutely. And I think like so many of us that have dedicated time to our breeds, it's sort of a put a nickel in me and make me shut up. So I'm like that. So.
You know, that yeah, you're very right. Exactly.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, thank you so much, Lori. I appreciate your time tremendously. Congratulations on a wonderful year with Flynn.
Thank you.
And I will have information for people that are looking for additional details in our show notes. So
wonderful.
Have a wonderful evening.
Thank you very much, Laura. I really appreciated it and would love to talk to anybody who wants any kind of help. And I have just enjoyed this ride so much.
Excellent.
Thank you.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.